You're tuned into Berkeley Liberation Radio, 104.1 FM in the East Bay, and on the web at berkeleyliberation.net. We're here right now with the two compañeros who are working with the Hunger Strike Solidarity Coalition, Mike and Tony, and we're going to be asking you all a few questions around the prisoner hunger strike that's coming up, that's starting up tomorrow. So thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
So could you start off by providing a little bit of context to the prisoner hunger strikes, kind of talking about the significance of the hunger strikes that took place in 2011 and what's happening right currently?
Sure. Well, I think in 2011 we saw thousands of prisoners throughout the California prison system and beyond go on hunger strike. And of course there's ongoing hunger strikes in Guantanamo Bay right now, as well as lots of long-term hunger strikes that have been taking place in Palestine and in Israeli prisons. And I think in that larger international context, prisoners, people in prison have been using hunger strikes as a tactic to bring light to the deplorable and torturous conditions inside California prisons and throughout the entire world. And I think that's fundamentally where these hunger strikes are coming from, is prisoners trying to assert their power and collective power in whatever way that they can, to try and win certain demands for better conditions inside, and specifically addressing the culture within the prison system in California that promotes snitching and informing and becoming state informants for the prison system, and especially targeting prisoners who have a certain politic or a certain belief in ending, as they say, all hostilities between different races, which they claim is a part of the government's, I guess you could just say, their desire to maintain a divide and conquer policy that creates no form of unity between North, South, and Latino communities and Black and White. So, I don't know. Want to add anything, Mike?
Yeah, I think Tony explained it well. But I can just elaborate a little bit, to pick up where he was leaving off about the whole the issue of gangs that really CDCR exploits as a reason to have ever crueler punishments and arbitrary punishments, cruel and arbitrary punishments for people inside, because the CDCR encourages gangs. They assign people racially and use the divide and conquer strategy to keep people fighting each other instead of uniting to fight them. And that's what's so powerful about this hunger strike, is that the leaders have called for an end to racial hostilities. It's the supposed leaders of different racialized gangs within the prison that are saying that no, we need to unite and fight against these horrible human rights abuses, against the torture that's happening here in the SHU and California prisons. And they have specific demands that are very basic to respect their human rights, but of course it's part of a larger struggle to challenge the whole prison industrial complex that's so well represented by California's overcrowded prison system.
So recently, on July 5th, Amnesty International released a statement regarding the upcoming hunger strike. And the statement urges the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation to improve the conditions and to stop the inhumane treatment of those who are incarcerated. It also claims that the conditions in the prisons have deteriorated further in the past year, despite the pledge that the CDCR had made over a year ago after the 2011 prisoner hunger strikes. So our question is, what do we know about how the conditions have changed in the recent years since the past hunger strike, And also, how are prisoners communicating about this and organizing from the inside?
Well, unfortunately, the conditions have not changed much at all, which is why the people are going on hunger strike again, beginning tomorrow. After the initial hunger strike in 2011, the hunger strike ended because CDCR expressed an interest in negotiating, and similar thing happened again in 2012. But CDCR has not taken any meaningful steps to change the so-called debriefing or gang validation program. They've come out with a program called the Step Down Program, which is purportedly a way for people to get out of the SHU or out of solitary confinement by, taking responsibility. But it's really just another form of debriefing. They basically require people to provide a list of names or and snitch, provide information about other people who are supposed gang members. And this assumes that the people there know something, even though they've been in solitary confinement for years, or even though they may only be there because someone else put their name on a list, and it's all arbitrary. There's not any due process to how you get put in the SHU or how you can get out. It's all arbitrary, what this, they call it the IGI, Institutional Gang
Investigators
say about you. They'll say that you're a gang member because you have some article of art or writing that's related to your cultural heritage. Like if you have a drawing of an Aztec warrior and you have a Latino Chicano heritage, then that'll get you labeled as a gang member. For even a white person having something like a St. Patrick's Day card with a shamrock could get you labeled as active with the white gang. Having someone else's name or CDCR number in your cell on any of your papers could get you labeled as a gang member. So it's utterly arbitrary and cruel. People have been there for decades, and this is their last resort.
And also, just to talk maybe a little bit more about black prisoners, specifically new African prisoners, also any references to George Jackson or any of the prison uprisings or prison revolutionary leadership from the 70s immediately pretty much identifies you as a gang member and you get put in the secure housing units. Another really astounding new development as a part of the Step Down program that CDCR has initiated is that supposedly they're getting rid of the 7 gangs that they used to profile you, that they used to use to profile people before the new program. Now it's basically similar to what happens on the streets in California. If you are or found to be with 3 other people, they can easily label just 3 arbitrary people who hang out as a part of a gang now, as a part of their new supposed improved step-down program. So I think the other really important thing to relate this to is how similar and draconian these arbitrary rules are inside to what happens on the street with policing in California streets with black and brown communities.
And specifically about the question as far as whether things have changed, another aspect of things not changing is the retaliation against people continues after people participated in 2011, 2012 hunger strikes. They got 115, which is like a disciplinary write-up issued against them, and for participating in a peaceful hunger strike for political expression. And people are concerned that the same similar types of retaliation are going to happen again this time.
And another thing is that if you even a way that you can get into the SHU now is if you participate in hunger strikes. So that's like yet another ridiculous rule that CDCR has developed that actually is worse than their supposed rules written down before. Obviously before they did whatever they want, but now they're actually writing down the absurd rules, and being a part of any sort of protest, that is considered a quick way to get yourself in the shoe. So
yeah, they call it causing a disturbance, and they have specific procedures laid out that that say that if you are a leader and causing a disturbance like a hunger strike, then you can have your male privileges taken away, you can have all your visiting privileges taken away, and you could get moved to be, you know, further isolated in like an ad seg unit, away from, you know, the typical block of shoe cells.
And speaking of the organizers of the prisoner hunger strikes, many of these folks have at some point been confined to the solitary housing units for years, or as you've said, Mike, up to decades in some cases. So I'm not sure if you all can speak to this, but a little bit more about the experiences of what it's like to organize under these conditions for some of these organizers, or some of the folks that you all have been in conversation supporting.
Well, I think it's just a testament to the amazing levels of organization that, at least in Pelican Bay and in Corcoran, two of the prisons in California that house the largest populations in the secure housing units, they're able to write amazing political analyses of what is going on in the prisons on a routine basis. And a lot of their writings, and I encourage the listeners to really check it out, they can be found on the San Francisco Bayview newspaper and their website, as well as the prisonerhungerstrike.wordpress.com website, which is the Hunger Strike Solidarity Coalition's website. But they write collective pieces that address CDCR and the torturous conditions while being confined to these secure housing unit cells. And from my understanding is that communication occurs in incredibly ingenious ways, using sign language, using other forms of communication through cell walls. And, you know, I mean, just from my basic understanding, the people who are locked up in the secure housing units are able to have developed an intense level of political unity that probably that we can't even parallel or mirror out here in the streets. But I don't know, you could probably speak a little bit more to that.
Yeah, and just to give a little bit of background, you know, I'm speaking from what I've learned about from being a supporter of the hunger strike efforts, and also from being a volunteer and doing some legal visits. But it's hard to organize on the inside because there are specific rules that prohibit any prisoner from communicating with another prisoner, I guess, especially if you're in the shoe. I mean, but in general, people can't send mail to each other. So that, you know, that's an obvious way to communicate that is not allowed. So like Tony is saying that, there's ways that, you know, people communicate with each other through the pipes in their cells, but it's dangerous, you know, just for talking to another prisoner, or if you're for like walking by a cell and looking at someone or trying to communicate with someone, you could get it written up at 115 for that. So people are risking retaliation, like we already described, for organizing amongst each other. And another related issue goes to censorship. A lot of people have probably heard or familiar with the you know, how mail gets censored, publications get censored, if they're somehow labeled as something to do with a gang or with one prisoner communicating with another. So the San Francisco Bayview newspaper has been censored in the past few months because of talking about the hunger strike. California Prison Focus newsletter has been censored. Other like socialist papers like the Revolutionary Communist Party paper was censored. Just like how people's mail gets censored all the time, and they're accused of speaking in code to their family members, and so people are not able to communicate with even family members on the outside because of just arbitrary censorship.
Well, I would also say that, I mean, maybe it isn't so arbitrary. I mean, because these publications certainly have a political message, and that's why I think it's really important to understand that people are being targeted for their politics, and the guards represent a really right-wing, often white supremacist kind of politic that is really coming down hard on the leadership in the prisons. And they see that these publications are used to unite people inside, and that's specifically why they don't want these publications there. And so it's certainly a targeted tactic by the state to suppress a certain type of leftist politic that is emerging within the prison walls.
So this is not only a hunger strike, but also a work stoppage. So I'm wondering what you think about how this might shift the way we think about prisons and prisoners and anti-prison organizing, and how are these actions challenging reformist approaches to issues of mass incarceration as well?
I think it's important to make that connection. You know, this is a strike. It's another form of a strike, just like, you know, we saw strikes last week by the BART workers and the City of Oakland workers. They're different issues, but ideally we can, you know, all of these strikes have some sort of common goal of creating a more just society and ending oppression. The situation in the prisons, you know, for the people in the SHU don't get to work that much, but you know, some of the prisoners who have some access to some type of jobs are going to do work stoppage. And I think, like I mentioned earlier, you know, there's specific demands for reform here, but there's a larger goal of dismantling the prison industrial complex. The people that are in the SHU have been trying and have tried the, you know, laid out legal means to challenge their conditions. They file what are called 602s to challenge, you know, unfair treatment. Like if your letter gets taken away and you want to challenge that, you can write a 602, and it easily gets denied. You end up having to appeal it to the superior court, and then you could keep on going up to appellate courts after that. But that's an example of a reformist approach, you know, that keeps people isolated. Having a unified mass hunger strike is a very powerful way of challenging the whole system outside of, you know, typical modes of reform.
Yeah, and we saw that in previous years, in 2011, that the hunger strike actually caused CDCR to listen to the demands more than ever before. And in fact, some of the most basic demands, and again, most of their demands could be considered reformist, but the actions that they're taking are definitely revolutionary because they see a long-term political trajectory to abolish solitary confinement and the prison system as a whole. But, you know, CDCR did give in to some of their basic demands, like having hats on cold days. They've created, even though they won't admit that they're negotiating, there are mediations between CDCR and the prisoners on a collective level, which has not really occurred in the past. Collective bargaining, even maybe, if you wanted to compare it to labor actions on the outside.
The strikes are garnering a lot of support from a wide array of political activists in the Bay Area and in Los Angeles in particular, those involved with prisoner rights activism and abolitionist organizing. Why do you think it's important for people on the outside to support the organizing efforts happening inside prisons?
Well, I think given our communities, almost everyone in the community has or knows people who are locked up and are facing these deplorable conditions and have been for the last century or more in California. I think it's really important that folks on the outside no longer be silent and embarrassed that their loved ones are inside and facing these really non-human, inhumane conditions. And it's really important that our communities start to create a voice for these people who are being put away often for nonviolent crimes, quote-unquote crimes, things that the government deems as criminal. And it's really important to support the demands of prisoners to actually create programming. One of their main demands is to create programming inside. This is something that CDCR and the prison system throughout the country has systematically cut out of prisons. And at this point, one of the ways that you can qualify for parole is if you can show that you've done programming to benefit yourself. And if you're in the SHU, you don't really have access to programming. So one of their demands is directly addressing their own desire to improve and better themselves as individuals, which CDCR is preventing. And so if we believe as a community on the outside that we want our people to come home and not recidivate and reenter the prison system, then we need to support some of these reformist demands to actually get programming inside. And on top of that, in general, we should just be fighting for their humanity so that they are no longer treated less than any of the animals that we eat at the slaughterhouse. I mean, it's ironic, actually, at Corcoran Prison, there's plenty of ranches right next to it, and the cows have much better living conditions and can move around much more than any of the people inside who are in the shoes.
Another, of course, very important reason to support the hunger strike is because if we don't pay attention and support the people that are inside, then they're all alone. They're in the ultimate situation of isolation, living in a concrete box, and that's what the system is designed to do, to keep them isolated and keep them hopeless. But if we support the hunger strike demands, if we care about human rights at all, if we're opposed to torture, then everyone should be supporting this hunger strike. And if we don't let the people inside know that we're listening and that we are supporting them and we're willing to take action to support them or do something like fast in solidarity, send message to people who have the power to change the conditions but aren't. If we don't do those things, then the people inside will lose hope, and so they'll have to endure that. But it's also what kind of society is it that we live in and that we support and to allow this type of torture to continue and to really expand, actually, in the way that it has in California and across the country. So this is part of the larger struggle to against the prison industrial complex and against torture. And now is the time for everyone to step up.
And also just against snitch culture as well, and the government's long-term goal of divide and conquer of our communities. I mean, the people in prison that are leading or that have called for these demands are also calling again for an end to all hostilities, and that I think has repercussions way beyond just the prisons, And so, trying to promote that and support that is really critical, especially if we want to build towards any sort of world that we wish to create in the future.
So what are the ways in which the folks, the prisoners are asking folks on the outside to support them? And also if there's any actions or events that are happening locally that folks can plug into that you can speak to?
If you haven't already, it's pretty easy to find. If you search online, there's a petition in support of the hunger strike and a pledge to take action. You can find both of those at the website. I think it's prisonhungerstrikesolidarity.wordpress.com or very similar to that. And you can, there's links there to sign up for the pledge, which means that you're going to take action like, writing or calling.
Faxing.
people who have power to change things that are, but aren't, by, you know, telling other people at your work or school about it, by, you know, fasting in solidarity yourself. You can donate at the website. Like I mentioned, you could sign the petition. You could learn more about the hunger strike and, you know, and then spread the word yourself, you know, by email or social media. And take action in the streets by going to one of the upcoming rallies. I think there's the rally at Alameda, at Wally Manuel Courthouse happening.
At 1 o'clock. So tomorrow on July 8th, yeah, 1 p.m. at Wally Manuel Courthouse, which is, I believe, on Fallon Street and 12th in Oakland at the Alameda County Courthouse. That's at 1 p.m. In addition, at 1 p.m., at UC Berkeley, there will be some formerly incarcerated folks that are leading a fast that will begin on campus at UC Berkeley, I believe Sproul Plaza at 1 p.m. In addition, there will be a statewide mobilization to Corcoran Prison on July 13th. That's a Saturday. Folks are asking people to meet up at Cesar Chavez Park in Corcoran at 2 p.m. on July 13th. And there will be a march to the gates at Corcoran, which houses the most people in solitary confinement in all, out of all state prisons, and where there is a lot of leadership amongst people who are incarcerated there. So again, July 13th, mass mobilization across the state. We're asking folks, the coalition's asking folks to march on Corcoran, 2 p.m. Cesar Chavez Park, and march to the gates by 3 p.m. Those are the main actions coming up right now. And there will be, to stay in contact and to understand what's going on, there will be regular updates being posted on the website that was stated before, Prisoner Hunger Strike Solidarity at WordPress.com. And I think just to emphasize something that I read that was written by the one of the new African collectives out of Corcoran, was that this is a battle to really transform public opinion and the culture around prisons. And so the way that we win that battle is by having those tough conversations with our families, with our peers and our schools and our workplaces, to really have people rethink what is going on inside the prisons. And really, as we all know, the money that we give in taxes is going to support not only these conditions, but the prison guards that are just perpetuating this terrorism inside.
And we'll have those links to those websites online so that folks can plug into that and get some more information around the actions. And again, thank you, Tony and Mike, for joining us in studio to speak to some of the solidarity efforts happening around the prisoner hunger strikes.
Thanks for having us.